Although teenage starlets and their scandals are all too common today, the model for them all, the original teenage star, rose to fame and fell from grace more than a century ago. Evelyn Nesbit was just 15 when she became the first modern sex symbol, setting the Gilded Age's standard of beauty in America. Her downfall was spectacular when her husband murdered her former lover, one of America's greatest architects. American Eve, Evelyn Nesbit, Stanford White, The Birth of the It Girl, and The Crime of the Century is published by Riverhead Books, and I'm pleased that it brings Paula Uriburu, an associate professor of English at Hofstra, to the show today. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
So how did Evelyn Nesbit become the It Girl? That's a phrase I usually associate with Clara Bow.
Well, you know, it's funny. I had that discussion actually with my editor, and we decided that it was a phrase that people would know, and a certain age of people would know Clara Bow and the derivation of it. But I sort of was able to think of it as, well, she was the first It Girl. I make a joke in the book that she was the first It Girl before anybody knew what it was.
She was the first supermodel.
She was, absolutely, yeah.
And judging from the photographs in the book, she would be considered beautiful today as well.
Well, that was, I mean, the astonishing thing for me was when I started to do the research, and the more images I found of her, it was sort of really astounding how modern she looked and natural, a natural beauty, completely unlike the women of the period.
But she initially was modeling for artists, not for photographers.
Right, yeah. She started out first in Philadelphia and then came to New York and modeled for all of the famous artist illustrators of the day, and then the photographers came in. It was, again, the timing was perfect, the convergence of the technology.
We're not talking about artist models as we think of them today. We're thinking of the woman who posed for Gibson. She was the original Gibson girl, wasn't
Absolutely.
She?
Absolutely. Yeah, she was the Gibson girl. She posed for sculptors. In fact, at one point, I find it something, it's something about American culture that at the same time they were selling penny postcards of her from machines on the street, that she was also in the Metropolitan Museum. She was, you know, in several paintings and a sculpture.
And people were adopting her hairstyles, the things that she wore. She wanted to be an actress, but did she want to be as famous as she became?
You know, it's very funny. That's a good question, because one of the things that I talk about in the book is how she wanted to be an actress. She had aspirations. I think a lot of young girls, you know, have that fantasy, I suppose. And then she had enough talent, and she certainly had enough beauty. And when her mother let it happen, I'll say, then it became a question of keeping her demeanor so that she would be able to be able to keep her head, I guess, about her, which, of course, she didn't do.
Well, we're talking about a 16-year-old girl, comes to New York and becomes very famous. She's already becoming famous in Philadelphia. And her mother is her guardian, but her mother doesn't seem to be the best guardian. Is she pushing her into these problems, or is she just indifferent?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do, again, with the timing. I mean, her mother was clearly from the Victorian era. Evelyn was a modern girl, you know, ahead of her time. But her mother, as soon as she saw that she could make money from off of her daughter's beauty, and the way I see it is that she was not the stereotypical stage mother, because initially she was reluctant for her to go on the stage. I think more because she felt it wasn't well paying. It had nothing to do with whether she'd be in a bad environment or whether it would be exploitive.
So the family wound up living off of Evelyn's modeling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did she meet Stanford White? He was the most famous architect in New York, and a very great architect.
Yeah, in fact, it's hard not to go anywhere still in New York and not see a Stanford White building. But Evelyn was in Floridora. That was the huge hit of 1900, and she was actually just one of the chorus girls. But Stanford White went to see it 40 times, and he had, of course, an eye for young chorus girls, and he just sort of was smitten with her, and he arranged for her to come in to a luncheon at his apartment on 24th Street with another chorus girl, and that was where the famous Red Velvet Swing was and all of that. And so he began sort of acting as a patron and a benefactor to her.
Was he married?
He was married. He had, in fact, his wife is Bessie Smith of Smithtown out in Long Island, and was very happily married in whatever, you know, context you want to put it, the standards of the time, and had a son, a family, and essentially was living two lives.
Well, what was that red swing all about? He lived in Madison Square Garden, the original Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, he built the original Madison Square Garden, which sadly was torn down in 1925, but He had apparently one of his fetishes was pushing girls on a red velvet swing that he had in the middle of this apartment.
So he could look up their dresses?
I think initially it was all meant to be harmless because eventually, as I say in the book, Evelyn eventually is doing it stark naked. So I didn't even have to worry about looking up her dress. But it was a weird kind of thing because it was this sort of fetish that I see. This weird infantilization of women at the time, and yet at the same time, you know, looking at them as sexual beings.
Well, he was 48 and she was 16. Yeah. That was probably looked down upon at that time just as much as it is today.
I think, yeah. I mean, he was able to sort of keep all of that well hidden. One of the great ironies, and I guess the tragedy for him and his family, was that he actually did manage to hide all of these sort of infidelities to a great extent, certainly from the public. And then after the murder, everything just came tumbling down.
And he became a kind of a benefactor to her and to her family. He got her dental work.
Yeah, another bizarre thing in the book. And of course, he had this, he's an apostle of beauty. He loved the idea of just something, a beautiful object. And he wanted perfection. And Evelyn was almost perfect. He had her get her one tooth fixed that then he said she was perfect.
When did she realize that he wanted to have a sexual relationship with her?
You know, I don't think she did. That's one of the sort of myths that I hope my book will dispel, is that she was some, you know, conniving vixen, because she was really a 16-year-old girl who had no parental guidance and came to New York completely unprepared, I think, to deal with what she would meet. And I think that
she just thought he was a nice guy
she looked at him as
sending
a
her brother to private school and
right,
taking care of her teeth. And
exactly.
All
up until the night that he seduced her, he had never done anything to indicate to her that of anything different.
Now, is seduce the right word? It sounds like he drugged her and then raped her.
Well, actually, yeah, I guess the term is statutory rape, I suppose. It's the one that we would use today. But in fact, when I was writing the book, one of the things I was trying to do, I wanted people to sort of be in the moment and in the historical moment. So I was trying to avoid using terms, you know, contemporary terms that would sort of pull people out of that time, but also still make the same point about what he did. And he did. He plied with too much alcohol and took advantage of her.
And her mother wasn't around at the time?
No, he managed to send her mother out of town.
So how long did this last? Obviously, she swung on the swing nude after that.
Yeah, it lasted a number of months. It's hard to actually say because he still maintained a relationship with her. Even when they were no longer, quote, a couple, she was no longer his mistress, he still maintained a relationship with her, paying for her bills and her apartment and things like that.
And then she moved on to Jack Barrymore from the Barrymore family, but not one of the celebrated actors, one of the more dissolute of the group.
Well, I think what happened, yeah, that was I have a chapter called The Barrymore Curse in the book, and how he was actually, you know, at the time when she met him, she was only 17. He was a cartoonist. He wasn't an actor. And I said that he seemed to be actually avoiding the family curse, because Lionel and Ethel Barrymore were already well-known stage actors. But he eventually fell into the family business.
So she winds up at a certain point being sent to a school in New Jersey, a boarding school in New Jersey, the first opportunity she's had in years to actually meet people of her own age and have some kind of normal teenage life. Mm-hmm. Was this something that she wanted to do?
Well, it's funny. Up until the point, Evelyn's father died when she was young, and up until then, she had great aspirations. Her father kept telling her he wanted her to go to Vassar, which was extremely rare for any girl at the time to go to college. And so, when he died, all of that sort of ended. But she was always very interested. She loved reading. She was ultimately a voracious reader, and so initially, she was unhappy that she was being taken out of, you know, the bright lights of Broadway at that point, even though she was still only 17. But once she got back, when she went to the school, she actually got back into it, was actually pretty happy about it.
Then she met Harry Thaw. Paula Uriburu is the author of American Eve, Evelyn Nesbit, Stanford White, and The Birth of the It Girl, and The Crime of the Century. It is published by Riverhead Books. How did she meet Harry Thaw? Another older man,
right,
at least in relation to her.
Right. He was only twice her age when he met her. Thaw was somebody who is a really kind of strange, fascinating figure in his own right. He One of the things that people don't realize is he actually was obsessed with Sanford White before Evelyn came on the scene. But
I'm as depraved, even though Harry had his own peccadilloes.
Right. And Harry's, I think, were far worse and much darker. I call him the darker doppelganger of White in the book. But Thaw wanted to break into New York society. He was at the top of Pittsburgh society and felt that he would be welcomed here. But and he identified White somehow as his enemy because he... You know, White had actually either built or was a member of most of the clubs, and Harry was turned away from them. So he developed this obsession with White, and he saw Evelyn and knew that there was some connection there. And ultimately, I think if he couldn't get at White one way, he was going to do it another way.
Well, he strikes me as mentally ill to some degree. He was a drug abuser. But he winds up marrying Evelyn. She doesn't seem to be all that interested in him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the hardest thing for me when I was writing the book. And the way that I came to see it in the course of writing it was that she was, at that point, she was still only 19. So I like to put it in the context of how old she was. She had been taking care of her family since the age of 14. And once White, in a sense, had ruined her for anybody else, there were very few options for a young girl at the time. I mean, really, her choices were so limited. And Harry was able to, like a lot of good sociopaths, to put on a good face and to even apologize when he behaved badly. And he had $40 million, so, you know.
Not bad. Well, we can't go into the whole story, but Harry kills Stanford White in a jealous rage. It becomes a major cause celeb. Yeah. And she testifies. He winds up going to jail. And she writes a memoir, although she did not have a happy life.
No, she says that the tragedy wasn't that Stanford White died, but that I lived. And she lived for a long time. She lived to be 82 years old. And
as a lost soul.
Yeah, for a long time. It took her a long time to get past the notoriety. In a sense, she had to wait for people to forget about the notoriety of it all.
What about her memoirs? Are they any good?
Her memoirs are really, I mean, one of the things that I think is just absolutely surprising when you look at her picture and you think of her as just this, teenage sex goddess, whatever, celebrity, was that she was a very good writer. And she says some very poignant things in her memoirs. They're almost impossible to find, but...
Paula Uraburo will be giving a talk and signing books tonight at 8 o'clock at the National Arts Club Sculpture Court. That's at Gramercy Park South on East 20th Street. She's an associate professor of English at Hofstra University. Her book, American Eve, Evelyn Nesbit, Stanford White, The Birth of the It Girl and the Crime of the Century, published by Riverhead Books. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I appreciate being here. Thank you.